Sarah Willis is a horn player, and she's also a teacher. She loves being able to share her instrument with so many different young up-and-coming players. That's why she traveled to Cuba, and she met so many horn players there that had instruments that were literally falling apart. So she wanted to do something for them. She went to Cuba, and they made a recording together. That's the story behind Mozart y Mambo. It's what you're going to be hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with Sarah Willis. Sarah, are you currently in Berlin?
I'm in Berlin. We're in the middle of a thunderstorm right now, so if you hear any growls, it's the thunder.
And you are a brass player in the Berlin Philharmonic.
I am, member of the horn section.
And, of course, that's kind of an historic step for you and women of all kind, because you were the first woman to be included in their brass section. And I know, actually, that isn't a huge deal for you. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, to be honest, when I did the audition, that wasn't the most important thing in my mind. I basically just wanted to play as well as I could on the day. And I never actually thought I would get the job, but I wanted to do the best I could. And so when at the end of the audition, when everyone came out and congratulated me, I was actually thinking, well, why are they congratulating me? The other guy got it. I was convinced that the other guy in the final had got the job. And they said, no, you got the job. And then you go into a sort of daze and everyone comes up and congratulates you because the whole orchestra listens to the audition. And then somebody said, you're the first woman in the Berlin Philharmonic brass section. I thought, oh, goodness, yes, so I am. I've got to call my mum.
So how many years have you been playing in the Berlin Philharmonic now?
I joined the orchestra in 2001. I'd been at the Staatskapelle Berlin under Daniel Barenboim since I hate to even admit it, 1991 I got the job. I was a young student. I knew nothing about playing in an orchestra. I started there very early and was there for 10 years and then moved over to the Philharmonic.
Let's go back to the beginning. How old were you when the French horn first captured your imagination?
Well, it didn't really capture my imagination at all at the beginning because I wasn't quite sure what it was. I wanted to be a concert pianist and I was going to play Tchaikovsky and Grieg and all these great piano concertos. And my teacher at school told me to study in an English conservatory, you needed two instruments. So I said, okay, what other instrument can I learn? And he said, well, we've got an oboe or a flute or a clarinet. And no offense to oboes or flutes or clarinets, they're great instruments, but I just wasn't very interested in playing them. And I decided the harp was quite nice, but my dad said absolutely not, because he'd have to buy a new car and he'd have to carry it everywhere for me. And so the harp was out. But then the teacher said to me, well, we have a French horn at school, but not many girls play that. It's more a boys' instrument. So I thought, I'll give it a go. It's not fair that the boys get to play the French horn. I'll give it a go. And you know, I was one of these very lucky people that doesn't matter what genre you are in, whether it's music or dentistry or doctors, if your very first teacher instills passion and curiosity and love in you for what you're learning about, it stays with you all your life. And my very first teacher was incredible. And it was really love from the first horn tones.
So you grew up in England. Where did you grow up?
I grew up all over the place, actually. My father was a foreign correspondent, and I was born in America, believe it or not. So I have an American passport, and I also have a British passport. And he took us with him, our family. He took us to Japan. We were 2 years in Japan. We were 5 years in Moscow. We lived for 6 years in Boston and ended up in England. My mom said that was enough. She wanted to go home. And we lived in Surrey, which is about half an hour south of London. And I went to school there, and that's where I started playing the French horn and just totally fell in love with this instrument and decided that's what I was going to do. Forget all the piano concertos. I wanted to play the horn.
You have become an incredible ambassador for your instrument as a performer and also as a TV personality. In 2014, you launched Sarah's Music, which is a TV program for German television channel Deutsche Welle. Tell me what you have loved the most about hosting this program.
It's been an incredible experience to host this program. When it started, it really literally fell into my lap. I met the new head of the Deutsche Welle at an event that the Berlin Phil Brass Ensemble was playing at. And I ended up sitting next to him and his wife at a table and proceeded to tell him he had to do more for culture. And now I can't believe I was so bold. I wasn't applying for a job. I was just saying you need to do more for classical music, and got a phone call the next day saying, would I like to come in for an interview? I thought, an interview? I have a job. I don't need another job. And they were looking for someone to front a classical music show. And he asked me what sort of format I could imagine. And I had absolutely no idea. I'd never even considered doing my own TV show. And we settled on 12 minutes every second week. And basically, it was supposed to be 6 episodes. I ended up doing 96 episodes. My film crew had to come with me wherever I was in the world, on tour with the Berlin Phil or teaching in Japan, or I went to Cuba for the very first time, and they came with me and did some programs there. So it's been an amazing journey to do this. And I've learned so much, because it was more or less a one-girl show. I ended up writing it, producing it, presenting it, directing it, and then editing it and promoting it, not all by myself. They locked me out of the editing room because they said if I had my own way, the programs would be 3 hours.
Yeah, distilling that into 12 minutes, wow. Are you still doing the program then?
No, sadly, the program was put on hold for a while. We decided to do some bigger specials rather than every second week, because to be honest, I do have a great day job in the Berlin Phil. And this went on for 4.5 years, and it was really tough work. It was wonderful. I learned a lot. I love communicating about classical music. We didn't only do classical. We did jazz, we did pop, we did hip hop. But it was a huge thing. And so it was quite okay last January to then say, okay, well, we'll focus on some other things. And I've made a movie about Beethoven for them that's coming out. And then, of course, the big Mozarty Mambo project, which we made a documentary film about for Deutsche Welle.
Oh, wow. Tell me more about that.
Well, I decided, I had this crazy idea that I was going to record an album in Havana, because I was teaching there and I'd fallen in love with these musicians. They are just so wonderful. And they play on such terrible instruments, some of them. And I decided I wanted to do something to help, to raise the awareness. Because, I mean, did you know there were such great classical musicians in Cuba? Most people don't. If you go to Cuba, you listen to salsa. You go out to the bars, you listen to merengue, cha-cha-cha, son, bolero, but you don't go to hear Mozart. And I was lucky enough to hear them playing Mozart, and I just thought, wow, they're incredible, but the instruments are pretty awful. So in my crazy Willis way, I decided I wanted to do something to help, decided to record an album there, but wanted it to be documented, because it was a very, very special journey and almost killed me along the way. It was really hard work. But it was wonderful, and we made a beautiful film about it for Deutsche Welle, and it's online now. I hope you get to see it.
So this is the recording we're talking about, is that right?
This is exactly it.
So there's a documentary about how you put this together. Well, how exciting that is. Tell me what the title of this recording is.
This recording has the title Mozart y Mambo, Mozart and Mambo. And that's basically what it is. As a horn player, I've always wanted to record the Mozart horn concertos. I mean, who doesn't? That's quite a grand statement. But I really always wanted to record them. And when I met this orchestra, the Havana Lyceum Orchestra, and their conductor, wait for it, José Antonio Méndez Padrón, but we can call him Pepe, it's a lot easier, especially on air. And I had the idea of recording with them. I love the way they play Mozart. I love the way that Pepe works with them. But it wasn't enough. It was also a little bit selfish of me, because I love Cuban music so much. I decided I wanted to learn how to play it. And what better way than commissioning some pieces to mix up Mozart and Mambo and put a wonderful Cuban flair into the pure Mozart mix. So we have pure Mozart. We also have some pure Cuban songs, but we also have a wonderful fusion of Mozart and Mambo, and that's the title.
Let's talk about the fusion pieces, because there's a couple of them, I believe. Tell me about them, who arranged them, and what makes them so much fun to play.
Well, the main concerto on the album is Mozart's third horn concerto, which is an absolute favorite of mine. And the rondo is very well known, the last movement. it's a wonderfully catchy tune. And Mozart wrote a lot of dance music. You know, you can literally dance to almost every last movement of a symphony of his. And I think the same of the Mozart horn concertos. You can dance to the last movements. So I have a wonderful arranger in Australia called Joshua Davis, and he's done a lot of my horn ensemble work and some solo pieces as well over the years. And I said, listen, I've got this crazy idea. I want to turn this piece into a mambo. He was like, sure, no problem. The Australians are so laid back. It's like, sure, no problem. But he didn't know much about Cuban percussion. He also didn't have any programs, arranging programs, software. He didn't have the right software for real Cuban percussion. So I said, I've got just the person to help us, and turned to a wonderful musician from Cuba, Juniet Lombida, who plays saxophone on the album and is one of Cuba's best loved saxophone players and has one of the best hairstyles that I've ever seen there. When you see a photo of him, you'll know what I mean. And he said, sure, he's happy to help. So we had this wonderful WhatsApp group between Perth, Australia, Berlin, and Havana. And I would say, okay, I wanted to keep the rondo form. So you would have the melody coming back, and then another melody, then coming back to the beginning. I wanted to keep that in honor of Mozart. But we didn't just want to put a Cuban beat over Mozart. You know, that was also a shame. So they have done some really clever things with it. And it was just a wonderful way to watch them work. I'd say, okay, a little bit more Mozart here. Joshua had said, okay, I'll write it down. Immediately a text would come or a voice message from Havana saying, hey man, no, you've got to do it. And Joshua would write back and say, okay, I'll try and write that down. So this is how the work went. And then we found this wonderful piece created from all this craziness, Rondo alla Mambo. It's based on the third movement of the concerto. And there's everything in it. There's singing. There's dancing. There's wickedly difficult horn playing. And basically, it makes me smile every time I hear it.
Tell me about your collaborators on this new recording.
I've had wonderful collaborators, all who I'm very proud to call my friends. They've become my Cuban family. We've mentioned the conductor, Pepe Mendes, who is really incredible. The way he works with his orchestra, the Havana Lyceum Orchestra, they've been a team since they've all been studying together, and you can tell they've grown together. They are very reliant on him, sometimes too reliant. Sometimes I made him stop conducting to make them listen to what I was doing so that they would react quicker. It's a very young orchestra, a very motivated orchestra, and they're just a great, great team. I was really, really happy to play with them. It's amazing also how well they play on such terrible instruments. Some of them really do not have good quality instruments. So this was also part of my project, that part of the profits from the CD are going towards buying them new instruments. We have a fund called the Instruments for Cuba Fund. And the first thing we're going to buy is a good horn for the best horn player there. And the other collaborators, I've had wonderful arrangers. They're all Cuban, except for Joshua in Australia, but Juniet Lombida, our saxophone player, Jorge Aragon, did the Cuban songs. And then we've had the Sarabanda, the Cuban salsa band, which was really great fun to see how a real Cuban popular music band works. It's completely different. You know, they take no prisoners with the rhythm, you know, and German orchestras are really famous for playing behind the beat. We play together, but we play behind the beat. I tell you, if you play behind the beat with a Cuban salsa band, you've had it. They've left you behind. They've already finished. And there's no space in there to maybe make something musical or take a little time over a phrase. No way. You've just got to get your notes done and get out of there. But there was time to be wonderfully romantic in the Cuban songs that we did, especially in Dos Cardenas Para Ti, which was made famous by Ibrahim Ferrer from the Buena Vista Social Club. And there, Juniet Lombida, our saxophone player, said to me, Sarita, you cannot play this piece on the horn unless you can sing it. He said, I do not want you playing this until you can sing it. He printed out the text, gave it to me, said, I want to hear you sing that tomorrow. So guess who learned the text and had to learn how to sing it? And he was right. Until you have it in your body, you cannot play Cuban music, because the Cubans don't just play the music, they are the music. They move when they play, they move when they sing, they even move when they're playing Mozart. And it's wonderful. They experience the whole thing. It's a whole body experience. And I had to learn a lot of that to be able to do this project.
That's funny you would say that, because right when you said that, I was thinking about how many times I'll go and sit in a concert hall, watch an orchestra, and so few of the members are moving. I'm like, how are you not moving? Or the people in the audience. And I've always thought, how can you not move when you listen to this music or any music?
That's exactly it. And I'm lucky because in my orchestra, the Berlin Philharmonic, we've often been described as a wild animal on stage. We do move all together. It's like a seething mass. Well, it depends on what we're playing. Obviously, if we're playing something quiet and sad, we try not to move so much. But I love that. And German orchestras tend to move a lot more than the American orchestras. But the Cubans, they'll even count their bars rest with their bodies. They'll move their shoulders and be going, a one, and a two, and a three, and a four. And it's such a pleasure to watch. And I had to be careful when I finished the recording and went back to my job at the Berlin Philharmonic, I had to make myself sit very still, because I found myself wanting to move to Mambo on stage, to Bruckner, and that didn't really fit.
Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 3 is a favorite of yours. What did you focus on as you were putting your statement down about this piece of music on this new recording?
That's a wonderful question. What did I focus on? It's very difficult, I find, to play Mozart well as a professional horn player, having heard this piece for literally the last 30 years. Every student that comes to play for me plays this piece. It's on practically every audition panel, every audition list that I've ever listened to. You know it back to front. And I find it actually quite hard to put aside all my preconceptions of it, all my old habits. Literally, the second movement of the third horn concerto was one of the first pieces I ever performed on the horn, the Romanza. It's not so difficult. The notes are not so difficult. So my teacher put that in front of me, and I got up in front of an audience and played it. Not very well, I don't think, but my parents clapped and clapped. But I just have these memories of playing this piece very often during my entire studies. And also memories of playing them in concerts with orchestras and being so hideously nervous that I almost died. So you get a lot of baggage along your way as a musician with pieces. And I love it so much. I've never lost my love for Mozart Third Horn Concerto. But to prepare it for this recording, I had to really like go back to the basics. And had long conversations with colleagues of mine about how to do this, because you have it in your head. And I decided to sing it. So I was singing it everywhere. And I found I went back to my natural instrument, which is the voice. You know, I don't want to sing to anyone. I've got a terrible voice. But you know what I mean? It's sort of, I didn't have the horn in my hand, so it wasn't a horn piece anymore. And I turned it into a little mini opera for myself. And it really helped, because I could play the notes. I just needed to find my way of playing the notes again, having listened to so many versions of it over the years. The other thing that was a big challenge for me is that I play low horn in the Berlin Philharmonic, which means I'm a section player. I play in the section at the back of the orchestra. I have enough solos. We horn players have the potential to ruin a concert. we are what we play, everyone can hear, whether you're in the section or not. But I don't play all the solos. So for me to have to get up and be in front of the orchestra instead of behind the orchestra, that was a big challenge as well. So I didn't only put musical work into it. I had to put a lot of mental work into the performance as well to make sure I was strong enough to go up there and stand in front of everyone, and to record it and to make a documentary film. I didn't make things easy.
No, it doesn't sound like it. You have made several trips to Havana. I think was the first one for your Sarah's Music program?
The first trip to Havana was actually to check it out. I teach every year at the New World Symphony in Florida with Michael Tilson Thomas. I go there usually just for a week, and usually in February, because February in Miami is a lot nicer than Berlin in February. And I decided I really wanted to go over. Finally, it's only 30 minutes, you know, you check in for 3 hours, but you're in the plane for 30 minutes. I wanted to go over and see what it was like, because I had the idea to do a program for Sarah's Music, because I'd been told there were classical musicians there. I'd been told that, you know, you can make great TV. But what I didn't realize is the red tape around that. You know, you have to apply for all sorts of permissions. So thank goodness I didn't take the film crew with me on the very first time, because I had to meet them. You can't organize anything there by email or on the phone. You have to sit there in person and drink a cafecito with them and talk and become familia, and then it works. So my first trip over was to you know, check out the lay of the land, to see what might be possible, to dance salsa. I love to dance salsa. And also I'd been invited to give a masterclass, because I'd met some people here in Germany that organized masterclasses in Cuba. And that's where I met all my Havana horns and was blown away with the standard and the musicality of these wonderful musicians. And yeah, that was the first time, and I've been back many times since.
Well, and oftentimes there has to be an education component to be able to go to Havana, right? And that's one of the things you were doing, as you said. And you discovered all these young horn players. And I think you even had, what do you call that, where you all did a little pop-up horn surprise?
Yeah, we flash mobbed Havana, and we did it every time. When I did come back with my film crew for the Sarah's Music episodes, we organized a proper one, and we invited all horn players in Havana to come, and or not only in Havana, we said if there are any horn players in Cuba, they're all welcome to come. I had no idea how many were going to show up, but it was incredible. We were almost 40 horn players. But after the very first masterclass, I said, okay, everybody, we're going out to play in the street. They were like, we're what? Oh, we're going out to play in the street. And we videoed that as well. And we got a lovely little video of our very first flash mob. So it's become a bit of a tradition to flash mob Havana. I think by now the locals think, oh, it's that crazy horn player again.
And I do recall watching one of your videos where you were dancing, and I think you were dancing the salsa. So if anybody wants to see you doing that, they can see these online. All your videos are online. There is a statue of Mozart in the middle of Havana. Did that surprise you?
It totally surprised me, because it's not something you really expect in downtown Havana. But I'd been told that it was there, and I went to try and find it, and I almost missed it, because actually it doesn't look like Mozart at all. He's in a little courtyard of an art gallery, and I almost walked straight past him, but I found him, and it was very inspiring. And I asked the little lady who was on the door, I said, you know, do people know who he is here? Oh, yes, everybody loves Mozart. And she quoted Eine kleine Nachtmusik, and that's where the idea came, that I thought, okay, Mozart really would have made a good Cuban. They all know him. They all love him. They say they love him because of his dance rhythms. They love him because in his music, it seems like improvisation. It's not, because he writes it all down. The Cubans improvise just, you know, out of their heads and bodies. But Mozart will take a theme and then run away with it, you know, and do all sorts of variations on it. And the Cubans love that. And they also said, one said to me, yeah, and Mozart, he was good with the ladies, you know, and of course the Cubans are as well. That's what he said.
Think Mozart would be reacting to the mambo being incorporated into his music?
Oh, that's a very good question. Mozart, well, we have, of course, no way of knowing, but I like to think he was inventive enough, experimental enough, to really have actually quite enjoyed it. And I hope so, because of course there are purists that say to me, how dare you change Eine kleine Nachtmusik into a Cuban mambo? On the other hand, who hasn't changed Eine kleine Nachtmusik into something? It's really been done all across the charts in all sorts of ways. Of course, that's a legitimate thing to say. If people that think, no, Mozart should stay Mozart, Beethoven should stay Beethoven. But I think these composers were so innovative, and Mozart was always looking for different ways of orchestrating, of doing different variations. He loved dance music. I really hope he would have loved this, because we stay very true to him. We stay in the same key. We keep his form. We keep the harmonies as best we can. And when we do go off track and turn it into mambo, we're still using his chords and notes from the melodies. We've done our best to pay homage to him. And I hope instead of turning in his grave somewhere, he's mamboing in his grave.
What kind of reaction have you been getting from listeners and people who have experienced this music?
We have been absolutely overwhelmed at the reaction to this album. We are number one here in Germany in the classic charts. We've been there for 4 weeks ever since the album came out. We've reached Latin charts. We've reached pop charts. We're in a commercial for Spanish beer. It's been overwhelming, and it's made us so happy, because Pepe, the conductor, said the other day, he said, can you believe that a horn player and a Cuban orchestra is the top of the charts? He's never heard of such a thing. And we're very honored, and I'm proud that a horn is up there, because I'm hoping this will raise awareness for horn as well as for Cuban music, because, you know, I love my instrument, and it's a mission of mine to help make it popular and maybe encourage young people to take it up. But we've had all sorts of reactions. We've had people saying they've had to put it on autoplay because they can't bear to turn it off, and they love the mixture of it. We don't just do Mozart, 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 mambo. We mix it up. There's always a Mozart and a mambo and a Mozart and a mambo, which is not quite the conventional way of doing things, I must admit. But it seems to be working. A few people have, you know, complained about the fact that I just said that with Eine kleine Nachtmusik, that was maybe a little too much. We did that one with a salsa band. These are not the classical musicians. This is the really some of the best popular musicians in Cuba. And you hear the difference as well. You hear the difference from the orchestrated mambo that we do with the Havana Lyceum Orchestra and this band. You hear the percussion. They are just so unbelievably tight. Like a mosaic Cuban percussion. You put all the bits together. And once they start, they really go. And there was no hanging about. I had to join in, otherwise they would have left me behind. Basically, the reaction has been incredible. And what's made me really happy is to get messages from horn players who have said they love it, because it's a big thing to put out your own Mozart horn concerto and the concert rondo. And there's another piece in there as well, because everybody's played it. You know, it's been recorded by so many fantastic horn players. So it means a lot to me that people have been enjoying it.
It makes me wonder if this format that you've created on this album is maybe introducing some people to classical music. Have you found that to be the case?
I'm so glad you said that. That was exactly my intention as well, because I didn't only want to introduce mambo to my friends and colleagues and fellow horn players and fellow musicians who already loved Mozart and thought, okay, let's see how Sarah plays Mozart. Oh, look, there's some mambo on the album as well. But the other way around, for example, in the Latin charts, people are listening to these wonderful mambo pieces, and if they buy the album, they get an awful lot of Mozart in there as well. And it's fantastic. We've had those reactions as well. You know, I've had some people from South America saying, you know, this is great. We'd never heard Mozart like this before. Most of them have heard Eine kleine Nachtmusik. But to hear a horn concerto, and you never know quite what you're doing, what you're reaching, who you are reaching with a mixed album like this. But yeah, as you say, it's a great thing that the Latin charts are picking it up, and that people are meeting Mozart through it as well.
With the COVID-19 pandemic impacting the way live music is currently enjoyed, how has that impacted you?
It's had a huge impact, this whole lockdown time, this worry that music is not going to get back on its feet. I'm very lucky. I have a job in a good orchestra, and we have a wonderful invention called the Digital Concert Hall, which means we can live stream our concerts, you know, all over the world, which we did all during our lockdown period. Every Saturday night, we had to get used to playing without an audience. That was the weird and sad thing about it. But at least we could get concerts out there, very small ensembles all sitting very far apart from each other. And you get used to that as well after a while. You know, we thought, how on earth are we going to play this piece when the first horn is, you know, 2.5 meters away? You do get used to it, and your ears grow, and the antennas grow, and you do react to the circumstances. But it's been a worrying time. I've been very busy because a lot of what I do outside of the Berlin Philharmonic is online. I do a series called the Horn Hangouts, where we go online and connect with people from all over the world, horn players, and talk about all sorts of things, which I won't bore you with now, but they have to do with mouthpieces and etudes and we like them. We love being horn nerds. But so I did a lot of that. So we were actually very busy. But of course, I think everyone, it doesn't matter what they do, whether it's music or any other branch of work, there have been those moments where you've thought, are we ever getting back to normal? You know, and we still are not doing big concerts here in Berlin. And we're getting there. We're going back to work actually very soon. And we're going to have rehearsals. And we're even going to go and play at the Salzburg Festival. And they've been doing a fantastic job about keeping everything safe and testing every day. And they've had quite a big audience. They've allowed 1,000 people in there. And up till now, it's gone well. I'm knocking on wood and tapping my head right now to hope it stays like that. But we are musicians because we love to play live. And no matter how wonderful you play in a concert online, I love the Digital Concert Hall and we're so grateful to have it. But nothing can replace that live experience, whether you play classical music, pop music, Cuban music. Music needs that. And you know, the other way around, I need the audience. I didn't actually realize how much I missed a live audience until they weren't there. And it goes the same for all my colleagues. There's been so many instances when you play a concert as a musician, you stand up and the applause is going and you're basically saying to your colleague, okay, so where are we going after the concert? I will never, ever do that again. I'm going to enjoy every second of the applause.
Sarah Willis and her new recording, Mozart y Mambo, featuring the Havana Lyceum Orchestra with Jose Antonio Mendez Padron conducting. Thank you to Valerie Kaler, our producer, for New Classical Tracks. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker.